Open Source is sponsored by listeners like you. Pitch in to keep the world's first podcast going strong. 15 years and counting. Find us at patreon.com/radioopensource. And thank you. I'm Christopher Lighten. This is Open Source. Imagine an old artistic masterpiece that's also a modern showpiece. For a solo performer who fills giant venues, east and west, indoors and out, in Chile, in China, in Africa, and the Andes, with audiences that seem to sit breathless for most of 2.5 hours. The thought this radio hour is that there's nothing in written music quite like the 6 suites for unaccompanied cello that Johann Sebastian Bach wrote between his church assignments right about 300 years ago. God's own dance music, it's been said. And there's nobody who can produce a civic and cultural event each time he plays these suites, as our guest Yo-Yo Ma has been doing, a sort of one-man dance band alone on the stage with no helpers for harmony or rhythm. These solo cello pieces are a tiny fraction of Bach's output, and still, they're inexhaustible, an ecstatic, solitary exploration of sunny slopes and deep valleys of heaven and earth, matter and mystery, fleeting glimpses of what human possibility, what life itself, might really be all about. People keep calling this a music track for life. Yours and mine, not to mention for a zillion TV commercials. It is music for the movie version of Dante's Divine Comedy, or to follow Don Quixote in Love and Battle. It's music for the many varieties of Shakespeare's plays and all his sonnets tossed in. We are getting a report this hour from the cellist, Yo-Yo Ma, who long ago made these his signature pieces, and over the last 2 years, a sort of statement to the world. You had me with just the title, The Bach Project. 6 continents, 6 suites, 36 performances in 36 incredibly different places. A mission to the world. And I'd love this to be the report back. What'd you learn? What was the idea?
Oh, my goodness. Well, the world opened up to me as a result of doing this Bach Project. And we decided to say, let's go to border towns. You know, borders of Texas and Mexico, border between North and South Korea, or...
the DMZ, no less.
Or the DMZ.
The Andes in Peru.
Yes, exactly. And so the idea is, let's do a personal survey of what people are thinking about. So associated with the Bach performances, I used the performances as sort of like an invitation card. So sort of saying, look, this is the best of what I can do, and let's talk. And so we had days of culture in action. Culture in action meaning meeting leaders in every community who don't necessarily come from the same sectors, but people who are actually doing things, using culture to make their community more resilient and stronger, especially during times of great change. And this is actually before the virus hit.
Amazing. We got to get you out there after the virus and finish it. But I'm also just thinking, it was Youngstown, Ohio.
Yeah.
Flint, Michigan. Athens on the Acropolis with the Parthenon in the setting sun. I mean, these incredible sites and not standard venues, not just geographically, but in the places themselves. Nobody can think of any work of art to compare with these suites that you could take those places. And nobody can think of anybody but you, Yo-Yo, to be blunt about it, who could deliver this message, a kind of, if the world can be healed, these are the kinds of elements that will do it. Is that too bold a premise?
Well, I would question some of your claims, but I think many people can play this music and play it incredibly beautifully. But the reason I did what I did this time is, in some ways, I have the benefit of age. You know, as a 64-year-old, it's much easier, because if I don't make any sense, if I play badly, people say, well, you know, he's old, he's over 60. But if I do make sense and something actually coming out of my mouth sounds halfway coherent, people are amazed, as, you know, he's over 60. He makes sense. And so a lot of the pressure of performing, of saying, oh, I have to prove myself. No, I'm not trying to prove anything. I'm actually trying to do a cultural act which involves my being a visitor in some place. So I never go someplace saying that, you know, this is what I know and take it or leave it. It's more like, what's happening here? What are people thinking about? What does the host care about? What do people feel are the things that they can't do without? Mm. And then when I'm performing, actually I become the host for 2 hours and 15 minutes. So I'm the host because I've taken in what the host has shown me, and I can, in a way, report back on saying, well, this is my report on what I've learned. You know, for example, you mentioned Flint, Michigan, and Youngstown. Flint, before going there, told my colleagues who went to visit, says, you know, when Yo-Yo comes, please don't have him ask more about water. We're tired of people coming in from the outside and say, oh, what's the water like? Of course, this is a huge problem. Yeah, we are living with this, and this is going to go on for years. But we don't want to be defined by other people as the community that has the bad water. We're proud of many other things. And you know what they did? They actually showed me their community center, where they're educating reporters on doing local reporting. Mm. They are so proud of their sports teams, of their mariachi band and dance groups. They have a really vibrant cultural community. That's what they wanted to show us. And the other thing they wanted to tell me, that we in Flint are three generations of makers of things. We have a tradition of making things, and we can still do it. We're really proud of that.
Do we have talent in Flint or what?
And found the exact same thing in Youngstown. People who just stayed, and they want to work through issues regarding jobs, regarding all kinds of, you know, judges came to the lunch and showed me what they were trying to do.
We don't get things right until something becomes alive in somebody else. Right? That's why we do music, because it's a service, so to keep us going.
So their citizens were just bringing their knowledge to strengthen a community, which sometimes on the outside we kind of think of somewhat dismissively, because there are no jobs there.
Right. These are people down in their luck. They've served a lot abroad and come back dead or injured, etc. These are hurting places. It's incredibly touching to hear you just ministering and listening above all. On the listening point, I just want to say, no apologies for being over 60. But the beauty of Yo-Yo Ma, people have known for a long time. I remember a friend of yours and mine, Mark Saltzman, saying he was a prodigious cello player. He saw you at Tanglewood and he said, oh no, that's the end of my career. I might play the cello as well as Yo-Yo someday, but I could never stride across that Tanglewood stage and say, let's make some music all together here. Never, you couldn't walk and celebrate the cello in one great gesture that included everybody. You like to say that you're not the Domino pizza delivery guy. You're there to eat the pizza with the audience. And I can't hear enough of what you pick up in these communities.
You know, I take a big lesson from what Mr. Rogers used to say, as in Fred Rogers, and as in Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. He used to say that his television work was a kind of work where the space between the screen and the viewer, the child's eyeballs, is sacred space. You never mess with it. I kind of think about that's also the space between performing on stage and the heart and mind and ears and eyes of the listener, of the audience member, is sacred space. You don't mess with it. You don't mess with it. It doesn't mean that you can't have fun, you can't tease people, you can do, but that is a really special space that you never manipulate, and that you don't put one over the audience.
When do you, Yo-Yo, know you're there in that sacred space together with your audience?
Well, I think brought there early on when there was, when early on as a child, you know, practicing. I often say to children that what you do when you play a note is so precious, because if you play one note and you play one other note, the way you connect the two notes, nobody can do it the same way. The way you connect, the way you get there, the rhythm of how you get there, and the feel of that space between two notes, you actually are trying to not show what you can do, but you're sharing what you're doing. And you're actually making the other person that you're playing for the most important person in the room. So I may be playing Beethoven, Bach, or Coltrane. If you can actually give that living thing, and it's not DOA, dead on arrival, into someone else's ears, and it stays living, and they connect to that experience into something else, that's what I call culture. Then my job is done.
Coming up, part of the test is whether audiences get up and dance to what the man is playing. This is Open Source. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is Open Source. Yo-Yo Ma's musical offering for A World in Turmoil has been to perform Bach's 6 solo cello suites on 6 continents so far in a 2-year tour. He's closing in on 36 sites, from Montreal to Medellin to Mumbai. You've been listening to a companion piece, as it turned out, for a live global telecast on the Sunday of Memorial Day weekend in 2020. Yo-Yo Ma performing the music that he's been talking about here. Everywhere, as he says, there's a sacred space where he and his audience meet. Always it's a bit of a mystery, and it's always new.
Well, when you're up high in the Andean Mountains, it's like, I think something like 40% of all the telescopes in the world are located in Chile because of the high mountains, because the air is so clear. And we went up to one of those telescopes, and oh my goodness, to be in the presence of stars, I mean, I've never seen anything like that. Mm. A telescope that's jointly operated by 16 different countries, for them to collaborate on something that's bigger than themselves, well, it makes Bach feel at home. And in Dakar, in Senegal, it's such a musical country. I mean, I went and we asked a wonderful person who was like a community organizer at a community center with a big music portion to it, and said, you know, could you possibly bring musicians from all around the country so that we could have a session and just talk, and they can show what they do and why they do it. And so for about 3 hours, we sat in this room, and with everybody, it's like people testifying the truth that they know. And it was so incredibly moving because the men and women are, first of all, so talented, so unpretentious, and so willing to share what they cared about. And the level of musicianship was so incredible. Mm. It's a very, very musical country. So I'm saying to you the special parts of what we saw in Dakar, but playing for people, that's the same thing. It's like, you know, I'm talking in a language that is not so different from what they do.
We're going to come back to this, the language inside the music. Yo-Yo Ma, I'd love you to speak about this almost unexplainable variety, energy, lure to everybody, and the power of these cello suites themselves. Let me say, what I heard you last perform them at Tanglewood, there was this incredible moment. Early in the first suite, you smiled in the dance movement. And the woman next to me, I didn't know her at all, sort of elbowed me and said, did you catch that? Something going on here. There's a story being told. There's something being unraveled. And it's emotional. It's everything. And maybe four or five times that evening, there were moments when Yo-Yo Ma on stage in the middle of this incredible delivery of the music smiled. But I wonder what sort of experience is this for you delivering it? And do you begin to know what nobody can explain, what is completely magical, penetrating, transcendent in these six cello suites?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think, first of all, each suite, and there's six of them, have six movements, of which five of them are dances.
Key point. Yeah, we got to talk about it.
And the first movement of each, the prelude, is essentially, each one has a completely different character, but yet it has the same dance movement. So think of, an old dance, a new dance, but that has the same rhythmic structure, the same beats, but they take on the character of the prelude of each suite. It's both familiar and unfamiliar. The structure becomes familiar because, the movements go one into the other. And dances are, by nature, a way of creating patterns that people perceive and can move to.
Yeah, right? And want to. I mean, it's sort of like, it was the objective of bands like Jimmy Lunt's band or Count Basie's band to get people on their feet. And that was the definition of success. One thing I wonder, in your tour, did people ever just leap up and say, I've got to dance to this? And would you ever consider that a sort of definition of victory, to play it in such a way that people had to move?
I do remember some places where some kids got up to the front of the stage and started dancing, and it was fantastic. It was hilarious. And I know at Tanglewood, I think some people took some shots of kids dancing on the lawn, and which is perfect, and why not? If people feel like moving, I think that says that they're receiving something. And
yeah, I would have been afraid that they could get thrown out of Tanglewood for dancing in the aisles, but not probably in Athens, or probably not in Dakar either.
Well, yeah, there are places. Well, and open air spaces are, in so many ways, by the nature of being in open air, is friendlier. It's more relaxed, and often it's during good weather, and which means that people are just, feeling good about things. Thank you. There's so many things I learned from other people and not always musicians. For example, Peter Sellers, I don't know if you've ever interviewed him,
the
wonderful theater director. He and Mark Morris taught me more about the Bach suites about 30 years ago.
Wow.
They told me, look, first of all, Bach took music from everywhere around him. So one would be the Allemande, which is Allemand, German in French. So it's actually an older German dance, older to Bach's time. And then the courant, which is in French is to run. And in Italian, corrente is to run. In Italian, that's a fast dance. So these are dances that were in some ways more courtified. I don't know if that's a word, but they were courtly dances.
Yeah.
The Saraband. I was in Lebanon when the person who was at the AUB, the American University in Beirut, many years ago, he said, oh, yes, the Saraband. I used to see people in Morocco, Bedouin women, dance to the Saraband. Oh. And they were swaying and circular dance, and it was really beautiful. Saraband emigrated to Spain in the 1500s. During that time, there was the Inquisition, and the dance was banned because people thought it was lewd and erotic. And guess what? You ban something, it either goes underground or it travels. In this case, it went to South America, it went to France. And the French version, the Saraband, is the version that Bach took. So that dance is, in a way, came from the furthest away. And actually, right now, I'm about to explore with Angelique Kidjo, who's this great singer from Benin. And we're doing a project of the Saraband Africain, you know, the wow. Saraband, which traveled back and forth from Africa to South America to Europe, back to Africa. And just look at the flow of music over centuries. But then the last two movements of the suites are really interesting because they were more contemporary dances. And they were, instead of courtly dances, they were dances that were more like villagers' dances. You know, the jig. It comes from Ireland, from the Celtic countries. So suddenly you have, you know, a three and one, two, three. And so you go from older dances, ones from originally in a Germanic place, but then French, Italian, African, South American, and then sort of more popular dances ending with the jig. You have a kind of world music that was written by essentially someone who wrote religious music, whose bosses were the church for most of his life, except for the 2 years that he worked for a secular boss who loved music. And that was the time when he explored all of these things, says, what can I, Bach, do? There are all these interesting musicians around me. Mm. I'm going to explore dances. He wrote the Brandenburg Concertos for just various unusual combinations of instruments, the violin, sonatas, and partitas during those 2 years. We think of Bach as a German composer. Germany didn't exist. And he took all this music from everywhere. And we think of this as classical German music. Well, is it?
Let me ask you, speaking of the dances as dances, to me, nothing beats the bourrée in Suite 3. Exactly.
You know, the rhythm, yat-da-dum, ba-da-dum, bum-bum, ba-da-dum, ba-da-dum, that is a jaunty rhythm, right? That does make you want to pick up your feet. And for those people that went through Suzuki Book 5, they will find that piece in their Suzuki book. But what was so interesting about Bach is that he, I think Albert Schweitzer proved it, the way that certain notes in intervals or certain rhythmic motifs were always associated with the same character. And the yap-a-bum, the bouncy rhythm, was a joy rhythm. And so anywhere that you hear Bach, like in the Brandenburgs, when he goes da da dum ba 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 da dum bum bum, da da dum ba da dum ba da dum is a joy rhythm. And so, and that's consistent because when he allies the rhythmic motifs or the intervals to words in the cantatas, that's always consistent.
You go from dance to sports, which fascinates me. I wonder if you don't deserve a lot more credit as an athlete, for crying out loud, up on that stage. There's a kind of physical mastery in those rhythms, but also in the fingerings, in the incredibly delicate manipulation of that instrument that I think is above all a kind of, I don't know, it's like hitting the fastest curve in the world. And I think you deserve honors up there with Larry Bird. That's that kind of skill.
Well, there's only one Larry Bird.
You know, only one yo-yo.
There's one. The story I love about Larry Bird is that, you know, he used to show up at the Garden early so that he would just bounce the ball and he would know every anomaly on the basketball court.
On that floor, you
where,
mean?
Where the wood may be like, you know, like anything that is slightly different, he just knows. He pays attention to that level of detail of where he's playing. And I think that kind of knowing where you are in each hall and thinking of each hall as a different instrument and that walking around the hall and knowing what its characteristics are, whether it actually allows you to be empathetic or develop a sympathy for the listener that's sitting in every seat, depending on how it bounces on the walls and what kind of material the hall is made of, whether there's a lot of wood or whether there's concrete or whether there's carpeting or whether it's an overhang from you know, those old vaudeville theaters and movie theaters that were converted into concert halls with a balcony that hangs way into the hall.
Right.
So as with your Larry Bird analogy, I think, you know, there's that level of knowledge that you play with. But then the other part of, I think the most important part of the connection, I think, between athletes and musicians is you know how to get in the zone.
Wow.
It's all about how your body, your mind, and your heart, and your physical self is completely in tune with what you're about to do. Mm. And the piece of music, to me, is is a human designed pill that has no adverse effects, but only beneficial ones. The pill of a Bach suite is designed to take you to a certain state of mind. That's what I think the training for a professional musician is all about. It's all about when you go on stage, you have the ability to not have to worry about the technical aspects of what you do. You transcend that so that you can make the audience member the most important person in the room.
Coming up, the spur to action and reinvention that seems written between the lines of Bach's music. This is Open Source. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is Open Source. Yo-Yo Ma doesn't hesitate to say that he searches for the truth of Bach's music and that he's found truth inside it, which takes a bit of explaining.
I call this forensic musicology. You look at the telltale signs of a person, and for those that know you and love you, they just know, okay, that's Chris, you know, okay, that's only Chris can do that. And people who are great and masters at their craft leave unique trails. And I think that's what makes, for me, the music of Bach constantly interesting and innovative, because I think Bach, so my take on his musical personality is the following. I think of Bach as being your favorite uncle or aunt who loves you intensely, is totally empathetic to anything that you might go through, you know, good, bad. They're always thinking with you, sympathizing with you, but they're also incredibly objective. So they can see you in perspective with whatever you're going through. And you go to this person, to your aunt or uncle, because they'll take you in no matter what. It's unconditional love, but they will also tell you what their truth is in terms of observing who you are. They care so much about you. And with their experience, they can, you know, you can count on them to not only to support you, but to always tell you the truth. Maybe
does
it's
Bach
the truth
tell you
don't
the truth?
Hear. Yes.
For example, when does Bach tell you the truth, either about the way you're playing or living or thinking?
I think Bach's truth is a truth that is like E is equal to MC squared. It's, you know, it's a truth that acknowledges that you live and you die, and that's okay. It's the truth that acknowledges whatever that we know that we can agree on, whether it's scientific truth or religious truth, it just acknowledges it. And that's a big thing, because you may not want to hear certain things. And he does that with proportions. He does that with ways of joining things together, different voices that come out in a certain way. And he does it in being able to code the infinite. So it's not, I'm not making this up.
Because you're talking about proportion, design in other realms, even in life, that somehow comes out of this music.
Yeah, he worked with the Fibonacci series, which is essentially, you know, he knew about spirals. His architecture codes the infinite into it.
Architecture and design are written into Bach's music, as was pretty clear from the beginning. And then Yo-Yo Ma enlisted a landscape architect to extend the point in a great urban garden, following the lines of organization from the first of Bach's 6 suites for solo cello. Yo-Yo Ma, one of the ideas I get out of your project, it's confirmation of an old idea, but is that there is some mysterious activist impulse in Bach, almost by design. He's giving you, shall we say, stem cell music. Go out and make something different, as you and Bobby McFerrin, for example, have done together. And there's a real tradition of it, but for you seem to have discovered it 25, 30 years ago when you had this idea of a music garden. I don't know why it didn't get built in Boston, but it is there 25 years later in Toronto, a spectacular sort of replication in an urban garden by the water of certain Bach themes, as if he told you how to lay out a garden. Explain that idea and how it came to you.
Well, it goes back to what we were talking about, trying to think of music as something that is living, that you pass on to somebody else, and you're successful if it lives in somebody else and they do something with it. And that, to me, is it's at the basis of both the arts and the sciences. You pass on living blocks of knowledge that someone else can build on top of.
The Toronto Music Garden came out of a dialogue Yo-Yo had with the landscape architect Julie Moore Meservey in 1995.
So the whole direction is up.
To bring down to earth, you know?
Absolutely.
And then one way is the forest.
Yeah.
But another way is to get these vertical elements that move and shine and reflect.
I think that's wonderful.
Together, they transposed patterns from the 6 sections of one cello suite into a constellation of earth forms, grass, flowers, and trees, a compound of the natural world and human imagination. But so how does the first cello suite become an urban garden?
Okay, so I've always thought, and now this is intuitively, the prelude of the first suite, I think it codes infinity. And how do you do that? Well, everything that we have that we know has to do with some form of pattern recognition. It's the same, it's the same, it's different. It's different, it's the same, it's the same, it's the same, it's different, it's different, it's different. And from that, we get the digital age, 01. And so first piece of music I started learning at age 4 was the prelude of the first suite. And I went through many iterations thinking about it. And I think 30 years ago, I said, you know, I want to do better. And how do you do better? You know, do you practice more? It's not, something was missing in my approach, because how do you go deeper? How do you get to better truth? And I thought, you know, this suite reminds me of things that are really hard to code and to measure. And one of the things that I thought of is, you know, you look out on a beautiful spring or summer day and you see these gorgeous greens on trees. And maybe around dusk, the sunlight hits the leaves. And the leaves sparkle. It changes. But you can't quite measure each leaf and how the leaf reflects the light. It's kind of an infinite variety of things that you think of and take in as one. And I was thinking that this is, in terms of art forms, I was thinking, you know, one of the first big revolutions in human history was when we started planting things, right? And the way people planted was, in some ways, one of the first art forms. Your knowledge of the earth, of where you are, of what grows with what, all of that requires knowledge and nurturing and care. And that's why we call it agriculture. And so I thought, well, if this suite means that much to me in terms of giving different forms of nature, then maybe in our most urban areas where you see less sky, you see more human light, therefore less stars, we become more human-centric and we forget our place in nature. Maybe that's what we need, is a safe place where a garden is free to the public and nurtured by the citizens that care about the garden.
Yo, that's a complex message, and it says a lot for it that that garden in Toronto is the pride and joy of the town. People go to see it from far away 25 years later. But I want to come back to your Bach project around the world, but also locating the fuel in it somewhere in Bach. It's happened before. There is this tradition through the 20th century, big time, come the recording possibilities, that people wanted desperately to put this music to new use. Albert Schweitzer, you mentioned, great organist, great Christian historian, great doctor, but he decided that the message inside the big, gigantic Bach organ pieces was what the world, you know, threatened by fascism and breakdown and war, had to hear, and they did, thanks to him. But meantime, your friend and teacher, Pablo Casals, first of all, he found these lost cello suites, according to the legend, in a Barcelona music store. But then he made them virtually the code of Spanish democracy. He would play them around the world in defense of the democracy in Spain. He refused to play them in the Kennedy White House because Kennedy still recognized, the United States still recognized the Franco regime. That's another whole story. But the point is simply, people taking Bach, and you too in this Bach project, as a kind of message to the world. It's the most wonderful thing about an artist and his work that people would want ever after to find a lesson, find a way out of a desperate situation like the virus today, for example. But speak of that, the way Bach in a certain fashion has motivated you across a broad spectrum of thinking and doing.
Well, I think the fact that a cellist doesn't have a huge repertoire. I've tried to expand it with really looking for music around the world and many different kinds of musics. And I think each cellist has explored different areas of that. I think Pablo Casals, as you mentioned, absolutely was an unbelievable activist. He gave from substance during the Spanish Civil War. I was part of the Bach Project. I went to visit his home outside of Barcelona, and the records show that he kept meticulous records of all the monies that he gave out, which were fortunes. And I have personal accounts from people that I've met that of how much he devoted to just helping refugees and just helping and doing music at the same time. And so Rostropovich did likewise. And so many people were, I think, played Bach because it has, first of all, a healing quality. For some reason, a lone instrument and an instrument that has the range of the human voice, but can be both extroverted and introverted, extroverted in the idea of dance, introverted in the sense that it invites meditation and reflection. Music that, you know, the sarabande, for example, is played both the same music, both at memorial services and at weddings. So you get the range of, and I've done that for so many friends, and unfortunately I've done that for their memorial services too. So my first encounter with the suites, playing them as a young person, was people writing to me and saying, I was going through a hard time. I was sick. I was stressed. I listened to this music and just want you to know about it. And so the first explorations of sort of saying, let's try and do a music garden. Let's do choreography. Let's bring it. If these are good cultural pills, why don't we dispense it and make it available for more people? And I think the second attempt of doing the Bach Project is likewise the same thing, because what we do know, and I experimented with, I tested it out. Is it crazy to think of a single person playing for 5,000 people at the Albert Hall at the Proms in London? So we did that a couple of years ago and then tried it at the Hollywood Bowl. And, you know, many people thought, well, that's ridiculous because people are just going to leave. And but they have a wonderful program of music that invites the cultural community in the LA area, actually contains the world populations. You know, you can have Persian night and it's completely filled. We did Bach and it was full, you know, 17,000 people. And so that gave me the courage to say, well, maybe we can try the next step. You know, again, it's building blocks. You try it, you test it out. You go to places where there's a chance that it might work. And the result is, of course, that we've discovered one of the big lessons is that every hyper-local community has a kind of strength and willingness for people to collaborate and help one another through whatever comes their way. The locations, the 27 places we went to, from Africa to South Asia to South America, they're filled with creative people, filled with people doing extraordinary things.
It's an incredibly inventive experiment you've undertaken, and we're all grateful. We're privileged to hear it, and we're privileged to know that you're exploring the possibilities.
Well, I'm so grateful to have had the opportunity to do this, because as a visitor in all these places, they've opened my eyes, heart, and mind to just the wondrous nature of humans, of what they're capable of doing. And I think we can learn from that.
We do. Thank you, Johann Sebastian Bach. Thank you, Yo-Yo Ma.
Thank you, Chris Leiden, for what you do.
It's a pleasure to do it with you, man.
Thank you, sir. Take good care.
You've been listening to a companion piece, as it turned out, for a live global telecast on the Sunday of Memorial Day weekend in 2020. Yo-Yo Ma performing Bach's 6 suites for the solo cello, live streamed from the studios of WGBH in Boston. It was offered by Yo-Yo Ma as a memorial, he said, for those we have lost in the pandemic, and as a tribute to the resilience of our communities. We didn't see the coincidence coming, our conversation and his broadcast, but now you've heard the program notes and we're all ready to hear the real thing, freely available on YouTube on the web. Thank you for the music and the gab, Yo-Yo Ma, and thank you, Johann Sebastian Bach. Our show is produced by Connor Gillies, with help from Adam Coleman. It was mixed by the engineer, George Hicks. Mary McGrath keeps time in our chamber sessions. I'm Christopher Lighton. Join us next time on Open Source. Open Source is a proud member of Hub and Spoke, a collective of independent podcasts making some of the smartest audio you can find. This week, check out Iconography, a show about the icons, real and imagined, that define our sense of place. Host Charles Gustine visits the real Paddington Station in London as a way into a story about the fictional icon Paddington Bear, beloved by children of all generations. Listen at iconographypodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And learn more about the whole lineup of Hub and Spoke shows at hubspokeaudio.org.
Hub
and Spoke. Audio Collective.